Hey Luxembourg, let's talk about something that really matters, your money and your future. Welcome to Money Talks, the podcast that brings you honest chats with familiar faces from Luxembourg. You'll hear stories about big decisions in life and in personal finances. No jargon, no fluff, just conversations that make sense and get you thinking about your own goals and how to reach them. This podcast is brought to you by Alfie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Money Talks. I'm Michaela Mercier, your host, and today I'm joined by Jenna Elvin, who is the co-founder and CEO of TadaWeb, a company that's changing the game in small data intelligence. Jenna is originally from New Zealand, but she calls Luxembourg home now. She's been on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, and to put it short, she knows what it takes to dream big and make it happen. Hello, Jenna, and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You are also leading Pulse, Luxembourg's startup association, and you support other entrepreneurs. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what TadaWeb does?
Yeah, sure. So as you can probably hear, I'm originally from New Zealand, so I'll try and speak slowly so my accent doesn't come across too heavily. But I started TadaWeb in 2011. Started with nothing, with a few employees, got some early angel investment, and have now grown the company to over 100 people with offices around the world. We really focus on the human side of information gathering. And I guess across the journey of having Tata, I got a really good understanding of what startups need to succeed in Luxembourg. And so that pushed me. Patrick Kirsten came to me and said, we need to make change. We need to bring about change in Luxembourg. And so eventually I went on to become president of Pulse with our mission of just really supporting our startups and making sure that the ministers listen to us and trying to make sure that Luxembourg is a conducive place to actually run and create, you know, good businesses.
At Money Talks, we talk about personal experiences with personal finances. And as a Kiwi now living in Europe, you've seen how different cultures approach money. And I'd be curious to hear your take on personal finance and investing. What was it like to grow up in New Zealand? And was it money something that people could easily speak about? And how do you compare that to Europe?
Yeah, sure. So it was definitely a big culture shock when I first arrived in Europe nearly 16 years ago. So I've been here a while. But I grew up in New Zealand. I was the daughter of a single mum, a teacher. And so we obviously, we weren't a family of great means. But that gave me a really solid base to really appreciate what we had. I think in New Zealand, we're a country that is focused on sort of living and appreciating nature, you know, not dedicating necessarily our whole lives to work all the time. And so the impression that I had when I did arrive in Europe was that suddenly I was in this environment where everything is about work. And the small amount of time that we do have to appreciate life, it's the ratio is completely different. So obviously money is important everywhere, but the emphasis is different. And, we don't make it the central priority of the way in which we live life in New Zealand.
And did you learn your best lessons from your mom?
I mean, I definitely learned how to appreciate the value of money. When you're growing up and you have to budget and you have to understand, my mum was great at sort of making every dollar stretch. And I think that definitely had a very positive impact when you create a startup, because you have to exactly go into that survival mode of limited resources. How can we then make sure that every single dollar that we're investing is going to, you know, going to the right cause? And so definitely that base of sort of working with scarcity definitely helped me to build a financially secure company.
What got you going on the entrepreneurial journey? Was it something that inspired you from your education, a mentor? Have you ever been employed?
So it's funny, sorry. So my background is actually law and psychology. It's nothing to do with tech or business or anything like that. But during law school, I actually had the chance to work on a project that was designed to bring solar energy to a small group of islands in the Marshall Islands. So it's a really remote group of islands on the bottom of the world. And I saw this as a law school project, right? I was like, okay, this could be fun. How do we get this going? And it turned out that we actually managed to bring electricity and refrigeration to a group of islands that had never had that before.
Amazing.
And it was amazing because we saw that suddenly food preservation was happening. That had never happened before. The amount of violence in the streets decreased because suddenly the streets had lighting. And that was a moment for me where I said, wow, you know, just a small project that we were dedicated to can actually have significant impact. And so I got back and I said, okay, maybe becoming a lawyer is not what I really want to do. I want to go out and change things. And that's what really got me inspired.
So the main driver for your starting your business was your values and the impact that you could have.
Exactly.
Doing what you like and what could positively impact the lives of others.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay. Could you share the best piece of financial advice you've ever received and actually applied in your in your journey?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the most important thing is, and that's, I guess, what I learned a lot through building Tata, is managing sort of money in versus money out, and never sort of getting yourself into a situation in which, you know, you can't see an out. And so I think when we're talking about that kind of thing, we talk about risk. And how I sort of see things, I think my risk appetite has definitely increased a lot over the past few years. But because what I like to sort of think about is calculated risk versus blind risk. And if you take too much blind risk, then, you know, it's never a good idea. What I really started to understand is that, sure, you can take risks that are really scary, and there have been moments of pure terror, for sure. But as long as you're taking a calculated risk with plans B, C, and D, then that enables you to sort of go into territories that have not been explored, but at the same time, knowing that what you're doing makes sense. And so, yeah, calculated risk and having multiple different plans.
You know what they say, that if it doesn't scare you a little bit, it's not big enough.
Exactly.
Your dream is
exactly.
not big enough.
And running a company can scare you a lot. So,
do you invest in anything else apart from your own company?
Yeah. So I've managed to sort of over the past few years sort of make quite a few sort of different investments. And I think one of my board members who's an extremely successful investor gave me one great piece of advice. He said, you know, make sure you diversify your investments. And so I think, you know, that can be domain specific across multiple different domains, but it could also be level of risk you're willing to take. So I've invested in a few sort of smaller startups that are, you know, that are probably going to fail, but what they're doing is something that's really, really evolutionary. And that's something that's never been seen before. So I've balanced out those kind of smaller investments with sort of other investments that, in French you say valeur sûre, you know, that will basically ensure that, you know, they've been done that way a very long time. They're a relatively low risk investment. And so just always ensuring that you sort of balance out the two.
Have you started early or more recently?
I started, I've always had a passion. I think even in New Zealand, when I was at university, I wanted to invest in forestry, for example. So that was just, you know, very, you know, a few hundred dollars here and there. But I've always had the mentality of investing. And it's been a few years, about 3 or 4 years, where I've got a bit more serious.
That's great, because I understand then that sustainability has an impact on how you choose to spend or invest your money, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the game-changing things for me, I think, well, in New Zealand, obviously, we've always been a country that's very, very aware of the impact of things like the environment. I'll give you an example. There's a lot of real estate agents that will no longer sell beachfront houses in New Zealand because the risk that the sea level will rise. So we have that very real proof that things are changing right in front of our eyes. That, you know, obviously made me aware that we can't continue doing things the same way. The second thing is obviously being a mom. It's, you know, we're talking about the future generations of our children, and the planet is not is not going to be nice for them if we continue this way. So I think we all have an obligation to at least have knowledge and understand where our money is going, and not just sort of making sort of, again, blind investments that could have, you know, detrimental effects on the future generations.
Do you already have these meaningful conversations with your son, who's only 11 years old, to pass on that kind of information to him? Is he sensitive?
I think it's him that's sort of making my eyes, you know, wider every day. I think the amount of, you know, the presence in schools, at least in, you know, for my son, is he is aware of the issues, and he openly shares them with me, you know, about, okay, well, you know, look at all the packaging on this, you know, on this snack, or look at all of this. And so I think it's definitely, you know, it's great to see that the future generations are aware, and now it's on us to actually listen and make the change.
is maybe financial education part of the school curricula in New Zealand?
So when I was at high school, we had a class called economics from, I think, it's been a while ago now, but I think from around the age of 14, we learnt economics and we had the option of choosing accounting. I just found it super boring. I didn't think I'd ever need it. And I still sort of laugh back at that now. But I still think that there needs to be more done. I think in the education system, you know, our kids need to be made more aware of the implications. You know, they can't just go out and blindly spend. I think I take my son out sometimes now and he might ask for something and I say, okay, we'll go 50-50%. Or, you know, if you do that, he wants a commission. So already just, you know, delicately sort of making him more aware of the way in which the world works with money.
And has your relationship with money changed as Tata Web grew?
Absolutely. I think it's only natural. I think, like I said earlier, I think in the beginning of a startup, the notion of scarcity is very dominant. And, you know that you don't have much runway and you know that you have to try and pay people and you have to try and invest in development and you have to do all of that on a bootstrap. And I think now the notion of scarcity has been transformed into the notion of strategy. So now it's not necessarily about how can I make sure that I have enough money. It's how can I ensure the money that I do have can be used in such a way that it's actually going to generate the results that I need. So that's primarily the way it's changed.
Mm. I propose something. Mm-hmm. Let's explore a little bit this side of your personality, who studied psychology and okay. Who knows about behavior. What's a habit that keeps you on track with your personal or business objectives?
Yeah, sure. I think behavioral economics are fascinating topics. And I think just the fact that we're trying to sort of apply a non-rational perspective in a rational world is great, but that could be for another time. I think for me personally, having a really, really good understanding of where we were at every single moment, you know, actually getting into the Excel files, getting into all of the current situation, there's a difference between revenue on paper and cash in the bank. And, you know, a lot of founders who are not necessarily from a financial background, they kind of freak out and they don't know how to sort of understand what all the spreadsheets are telling them, what all the documents are saying. But just my sort of personal experience has been you have to learn that, because if you don't know where you're at financially, in a world where cash is king, then you won't succeed. So my sort of habit is just really ensuring that my finger is on the pulse, you know, every day, every week, understanding exactly, okay, there's a payment that's delayed, or is there a payment that's, you know, coming in, or how do we manage this? And me as a founder, I know exactly where we're at all the time.
And how does this translate at a personal level? You have budgets, Excel, applications.
Yeah, at a personal level, I think, a little bit probably less, a little bit less scrutiny. But I think, again, going back to my roots as well, it's just, ensuring that you always have something aside for a rainy day. I think given the current economic climate right now, we all have to be very careful of the way in which we manage our money. And so I think, have fun when you want to have fun, but at the same time, make sure you do it with a level head. And I always just ask myself, do I really need this or do I really want to do this? And, that sort of also applied to the home life as well.
Still in terms of behavior, are you more of a saver or more of a spender?
It goes in waves. I think I would like to say that I'm more of a saver. And I think I am, because I think, when I was 17, I managed to sort of have a gap year and I traveled for nearly a year around the world alone as a 17-year-old. And the way I managed to do that was by, just saving. You know, I was working, I was milking cows, I was, teaching saxophone, I was doing all these things and putting money on the side. So I think fundamentally I'm a saver. But I also have, I also love making sure that people have fun and, I'm also a giver as well. So I think it's about balancing out those two sides of me.
I'm impressed by your complexity and your vast experience since a very young age. But still, I could ask this question. If you could teach one financial lesson to your younger self, what would that be?
I would probably say take more risk. Which is, just looking back, I think I was very much was a lot more risk averse than what I am now. And I think just because I was young and because I was naive, I think, you know, there's either, you know, go hard or go home. And I think, you know, we've grown the company in a great way, in a very sort of organic, in an organic way. But I also think that, you know, there are times now that I'm sort of taking more calculated risk and I'm getting the return. And so I'll probably just say to my younger self, go for it. Qui ne tente rien de rien. You know, just, you know, especially when you're young, you have nothing to lose. And, you know, I see that with my son as well. And now, obviously, when there's more skin in the game, you have more to lose. But at that time where you have nothing to lose, just go for it. Just try it, you know.
But keep in mind the concept of rational risk.
Exactly.
Like you mentioned before.
Exactly, exactly.
Not blind risk.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And in your view, to close this podcast episode nicely, what's one small change that our listeners could make today to make better control of their finances and their future?
I would say just make sure that you constantly check in with the current situation. You know, I think I've seen too many times across, you know, my friends or you know, associates or business owners and things like that, where they get super distracted by running a company or by personal life and everything like that. And they, in their mind, they have a sort of perception of what the situation actually is. And then they check in too late and, well, actually, that's very different to what I had assumed. And so I think just that constant temperature checking as far as, you know, keeping your finger on the pulse, you know, even if you think something, just constantly going in and you know, it's much easier to make small adjustments constantly then suddenly have to come in when it's too late and make a dramatic change. So it's really the notion of just really keeping on top of things, making small adjustments, just so you have the, you know, the mental security of understanding exactly where you're at.
Thank you very much, Jenna. It was enriching and a great pleasure to have you and to travel a bit far away.
Thank you so much for having me. And